So he has a 17th century torture device that's like shaped like a pear, and that has like a crank to it. And so as you crank it, the pear like opens up. You can only imagine where that goes. And that it used to be filled with molasses and fire ants.
Hi, podcast listeners. This is Becca.
And this is Jean.
And we're part of the team that hosts the Spokespeople Storytelling Events.
This is the podcast of the true stories told live at our monthly storytelling shows in the San Francisco Bay Area. And for today's episode, we're going to try something new.
It's a jumbo edition of the Spokespeople podcast.
What? Oh my God, what are you doing? Holy moly, Jesus, whoa.
3 stories in one. All from our February 2015 show, Oh No Cupid, Tales of Dates Gone Awry.
The event took place at Agape in San Francisco, and today's show features stories by Yasmin Vadapur, Michael Capozzola, and Zoe Lehman. Up first is Yasmin.
Enjoy!
So, without further ado, our first storyteller is Yasmin Vadapur. Yasmin is a graphic designer and photographer who is inordinately curious. She has a knack for striking up long chats with strangers, reading body language a little too well, and is currently debating about her next step. Yasmin.
Hi, guys. It's been a long time since I was with Spokespeople. I was back here a long time ago, so we've been doing this for a while. It's amazing to see how big the audience is. So I think a lot of us have really bad date stories. I have an excessive amount. But I think one of my more recent favorites was the night before Thanksgiving. I hung out with this guy. I was like, okay, so it's like before a holiday, everyone's kind of like ready to just get to know each other and not think about work for a few days. And I went to his place, and he had a really nice apartment for San Francisco, like super nice. He had an entire room dedicated to Roger Rabbit. An entire room. Like, I'm not kidding. Like life-size cutouts of Roger Rabbit. He had I have never seen Roger Rabbit, which he was pretty appalled by, but he had made these like the holes that you like disappear into. He had like made them out of this like cool material, and they've been patented apparently. Like his life dream was living for Roger Rabbit, and I was like, this is like $1,400 down the drain. Like you could be renting this room. Instead, it's for Roger Rabbit. Like what is that? That is really sad. But okay, so that was like the tip of the iceberg. So he's like, let me show you my treasure shelves. So I'm like, okay. Yeah, exactly. So we go upstairs. There's an upstairs in this apartment. It is all his. I'm like, you are 32? Like, I'm 30. Like, why do you make so much money? And why are you so weird? But so you go upstairs, and he shows me these little pieces of rock that he has in these little glass containers. And he's like, these are all moon rocks. I'm trying to collect a bunch of moon rocks to create a tile so that I can tell people they're standing on the moon. And I was like, okay, that's kind of charming, but still weird, but charming. Like, okay. And I mean, they're really small pieces. Like, you could have just gone, I was like, you could have just gone to the playground and told me they were moon rocks. Like, I would have no idea. So then we go to the other shelf, and there's a skull in a glass container on a pedestal. And he goes, let me introduce you to Amelia. I'm like, what? It's like, this is Amelia. And he takes the lid off, and he's like super excited. He's like, she's between the ages of 6 and 8. She has no fractures or lesions or anything. It was a natural death. She was white. She has a full set of baby teeth, and like takes her out. She's like, would you like to hold Amelia? I was like, was that her real name? Like, he's like, no, I just love the name Amelia. And I mean, he's like literally gleeful over this. I'm like, oh my God, like you're about to have an orgasm. You are so excited over a skull. I'm like, cool. So the scientist in me is like, all right, cool. It's a skull. I'm not going to think about it. I'm just going to like take her apart. So I'm like holding her jaw and holding her head. And I'm like, this is kind of neat. Okay, now I'm done. So I put it back. Next to the skull is a long glass container with two braided white pig, like blonde pigtails that he bought at an Odyssey shop. And he's now decided that they belong to a girl named Matilda. I was like, oh my God, you have pigtails. I was like, are they from Amelia? Like I was trying to be funny, but I was really creeped out. So then he had earlier had like alluded to this recent purchase he had made about like the most expensive item he had in his home. And I was like, what could be so expensive that's on this treasure shelf? Because that's all these things are crazy. So he has a 17th century torture device that's like shaped like a pear and that has like a crank to it. And so as you crank it, the pear like opens up. You can only imagine where that goes. And that it used to be filled with molasses and fire ants. I was like, okay. I was like, how much was this? He's like, just over $10,000. I was like, oh my God, I'm an artist. I would really like that $10,000. So I thought that could be like the max weird thing on the shelf. So we have a skull, we have pigtails, we have a torture device, and we have moon rocks. And a Roger Rabbit room. And then there's this little, like, mortar and pestle type thing. And he, like, shows it to me, and I'm, like, looking, and I'm like, what's this white powder in the bottom? He goes, those are bone fragments. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, so, like, in the 18th century, when babies were cremated, they would burn too quickly before they could, like, reach the fire, so they would have to break up the bones in these things. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, you're talking about crushing babies. Like, I'm like, are these actual bone fragments? And he's so excited. He's like, yes, isn't this so cool? I was like, this is really not cool. Like, I've held a child's skull. I've seen child's hair. I've seen torture devices that have been in uncomfortable orifices. And now I'm seeing baby bones. I was like, I don't really think we're a good match. So we went downstairs, and he made me a hot toddy. I was like, oh, okay. And also gave me a chocolate turkey because it was Thanksgiving. I was like, I bought this today for you. I was like, thank you so much for your chocolate turkey. And I let myself out. So we did not have a second date, but it's been an interesting story to tell. And every single piece was true. Not exaggerated at all. Okay.
Whoa. Yasmin, I'm so glad you're here and not preserved on a shelf somewhere.
Kind of crazy story, right? But wait, there's more.
Oh my God, there's more.
More stories in one
Yay,
podcast.
So excited.
Jumbo podcast, biggest podcast ever. Oh my God. Up next is Michael Capozzola. Enjoy.
Our next storyteller is Michael Capozzola. Michael is a local stand-up comedian / comedy writer. He's contributed to a lot of local and national events and publications, including TED Talks, The Bold Italic, The San Francisco Chronicle, National Lampoon, The New York Times, and McSweeney's, to name a few. He has also told stories at many of the Bay Area storytelling events. Please welcome Michael.
This is about a girl I met who did not care for my bone collection or my Roger Rabbit, the Roger Rabbit wing of one of my estates. In fairness, I was in a bad mood because I had to go discipline my staff in Monterey, so I really wasn't giving her the full attention that I should. Oh my God. This is kind of a timeline of missteps when I was 19, and 29, and each of these instances, they were revelations about the power that women have over men, where we're kind of bent, our best judgment goes out the window at each step, like, you know, we just know better, but it just goes out the window. I was a big sci-fi and space nerd as a kid. I loved, the same way people knew about sports teams. They could name every single player and who was traded. I knew every single NASA mission, all the astronauts. Totally useless information when you're in fourth grade. No one cares. It's not like, he knows all the NASA missions. Like, no one cares. And, you're like, and he drinks whole milk. Like, no one cares. It's, we took a field trip in fourth grade to a children's museum, and the theme was outer space. And, you know, it was all this great stuff, but there was this bouncy room. They had created it was a recreation of the moon, and they'd put down this gray foam rubber matting, and there were like stars painted all around, and the docent goes, you can go bounce in the bouncy moon room right after you go to the walls and memorize a fact about the moon. And of course, one of the girls, Alyssa, the queen bee of the entire grade, runs right to me, and she goes, tell me something about the moon. And I just like, she's just using you, don't do it. No, no. The moon is 1/6 the gravity of the Earth. Oh. And she just beats everybody in the space race, bouncing around in the room while they're still scanning the walls for facts about the moon. And she's bouncing around. It's, God, it was horribly played. In college, I worked on the radio station. I had a crush on this curly-haired girl from the Midwest. Her name was Tracy. And we were on a first date. And in the middle of the date, she goes, oh, shit, I got to get back. It's my shift. And she runs. She's about to run to the station. And she goes, but you should listen because I'm going to play a song for you. And I go, how will I know which one it is? And she kind of looks over her shoulder. She goes, oh, you'll know. And so I listened from 12 to 6. Each song, look, watching the snow fall. This is upstate New York, just watching the snow against the streetlight. And then I'd get around the room and pace. And like each song, like, you know, the first one she played was Unwashed and Somewhat Slightly Dazed by Bowie. A great tripadelic 60s song. Like, I don't know about this. I mean, I'm not that sloppy. And like, you know, 10 songs into it, I'm like, I don't know about this. This is a pretty bad idea. And then she's like, we're going to get back into the music with a dedication to my friend Paul. It's his birthday. We're going to play Birthday by the Sugar Cubes. Like, oh, I see there's a dark horse in the running. And then like somewhere in like the 5:30 hour, like, oh, we're going to play You Got the Look I Like by Nick Lowe. And then Nick Lowe starts singing like, you got it, you got it, you got the look I like. And we, well, that's a little cocky, this guy singing to a girl. I mean, she knows I have a big boner for her, but she doesn't have to rub it in by playing this song to fucking antagonize me. And then eventually I was like, all right, and fell asleep. And then I see her across campus and I'm like running through the snow like a freak show, like, wait up, you know. And she's like, what is it? I'm like, I couldn't figure it out. She's like, figure out what? I'm like, the song, you were going to play me a song. She goes, oh, I totally forgot. And, after college, I was invited to live with a friend of mine in Washington, D.C. She had graduated a year before me, and we weren't sure if it's romantic or friendship, but she's like, you know, it's a big, bad, crazy world out there. Why don't you just come live with me for a little while after college, get your feet in the water, you can temp, you can play the clubs, do whatever you want. And I lasted about a week. It was not that we weren't compatible, but it's just, you know, when you're like 21, like a lot of coiled energy of like, maybe I'll build a rowboat. I should read the Warren Commission. You know, just like everything seems like a good idea. I was worthless. I was a worthless, worthless guy at 21, very scattered. And we went our separate ways. I moved to San Francisco. She went into the Peace Corps. And I kind of thought of her from time to time, like, you know, the one that got away. And when I was 29, I went to D.C. for a wedding. My buddy got married, and at the wedding, I said, you know, if you go to weddings, they're romantic. I'm sure, you know, you guys, raise your hand, you probably met someone at a wedding. It's like, it happens, right? You know, but I started thinking about Jennifer, because I was in D.C., and I found a payphone. Like, I didn't have a cell phone. I was like the last guy to get a cell phone. I called her up, I'm like, it's Michael, I'm in the area, I'm here for a wedding. Do you want to meet up? She's like, yeah, let's do it. And we spent the whole next day together. It was so nice. It was just easy and comfortable, and it was wonderful. And she was telling me about the Peace Corps, and we went like pumpkin picking, and there's like we're throwing leaves at each other in slow motion, and it was great. It was so nice, and it felt so. I can defy physics. I throw in slow motion. It just felt so natural. She's like, we should see a movie tonight. It just didn't seem, you know, prosaic to see a movie. And I was like, yeah, let's see a movie. And we went to see, of all things, U-Turn by Oliver Stone. If you've seen it, you know, spoiler alert, very bad ending. But there's a line I took away from the movie I loved. There's a line where someone says, the gods laugh at a man with plans. I thought that's a very poignant thing. So we get out of the movie and we're both, well, what should we do? And she's like, let's go on a road trip. You know, something about the movie. And, you know, just like getting in a convertible and like, I was like, where do you want to go? And she's like, we should go to Savannah. I've never been to Savannah. My friend lives down there. We can stay with her and her boyfriend, Mookie. I'm like, I don't know about this. Mookie, long drive to Savannah, Georgia. Why don't we, maybe upstate New York. It's really nice in the fall. She's like, okay, let's go upstate New York. And we get in the car. I just had a backpack. And we start heading towards, I don't know Maryland very well, but we were like, as far out as Baltimore, but also not close to Baltimore. It was really far away from D.C. And while she's driving, and I remember her like chain smoking and getting more and more into this story she was telling me about the Peace Corps. She had dated a guy who sold drugs for the mob. His name was Alexei. And spoiler alert, that didn't go well either. And she's like driving and getting bitter. And she's just, fucking men. You know, talking, just getting more and more. Like, it's almost like I'm not there. And she's just like driving. Like, I fucking hate them all. Like, and I was like, I know how to fix this. I'll make a joke. And it didn't go well. It was poorly timed, poorly executed, not thought out well, lacked any cohesive structure and a punchline, and achieved nothing, all in one burst of bad news. And she makes this like three-lane change and pulls over to this median gas station and is like, get out. I'm like, no, get out. And she takes my bag and throws it and get out. And then and speeds off. Back to D.C. I could see by the direction, you know, and that was it. And then this guy's pumping gas, and he's like, did that chick just strand you here? It's a long story. And he's like, get in, I'll give you a ride. And then I was like, well, he doesn't know where I'm going. What is this, get in, I'll give you a ride? I can't just get in. I was like, I better suss this out. And he goes, where are you going? I'm going back to Washington, D.C. He goes, that's where I'm going. Come on in. I'm like, oh, I really played that very poorly, very poorly. Very poorly handled. But he's like, you're a killer? I'm like, no, I'm not a killer. How about you? No, I'm not a killer. That's all we needed to know. And I get in the car. So I wasn't keeping track of Jennifer's car. I just knew that this happened very quickly. Like, get in the car. So she's, you know, like in the distance. If I really thought about it, like, oh, we're right behind her at this point. But it was out of my mind. We start talking. He was on his way. He was in his 50s or 60s getting his marriage license renewed, which I thought was pretty cool after I'd just gotten thrown out of a car. And he's like, what's in D.C.? I'm getting my marriage license renewed. We're totally in love after 100 years and like that. So he leaves me off in DuPont Circle. I call my buddy and go, it didn't work out. Can I stay with you guys one more night? He goes, wait, you're in DuPont? Caroline is craving Chinese food from City Lights of China. I was like, oh, yeah, I know where it is. It's right over there. You told me about that place. Like, can you get us? And he gives me a little list. I'm like, awesome, I'll do it. I'll see you in a little while and I'll get the food. I go into City Lights, and as I'm making my way to the takeout counter, Jennifer's there with eight of her friends sitting at this table, and they're like patting her back like, that guy sounds like a dick. I can't believe what you've been through today. You poor thing. Been through so much. Like, I tied her up, put her in the trunk, and then driven over a bumpy road and let her out somewhere. Like, you know, like I was the bad guy. And so she doesn't see me. And again, handled poorly. I go right to the table, and I wait for them all to fall silent. Eight of them, they don't know, you know, seven of them don't know who I am. She knows who I am, and she's just... like minutes after she'd gotten there, minutes, you know, and they're all just kind of like, well, he's not a waiter, what the fuck? And, you know, I love Westerns, I just thought it'd be very cool to handle this like something out of a Western. I go, if you're gonna shoot a man, you better make sure he stays down. And then I have to go over and order the food. I should have ordered the food, said this bullshit line, but instead I'm like, make sure he stays down. Ah, fuck the food. And I get like, oh, mushu pork. And I'm like, or and they're like, that's him, that's the bad guy. Like, yeah, some white rice would be good. And I left. And that is how it happened back then in the day. Thank you guys. Enjoy the rest of the night.
Well, again, Michael, I'm really glad you're not tied up and 6 feet under somewhere outside of DC.
All right, one more story to go. Can you handle it?
I don't think I can.
I think
so
you can.
Much story.
It's the fun.
Too much story in one jumbo podcast.
So much fun. Yay! Okay, our last story comes from Zoe Lehman, a short vignette about miscommunications.
Okay, we decided this is not actually the end of the story of the show. We're going to have one more storyteller. Zoe's going to tell a story.
I thought I would just cap us out with like a little ladiness and a little lady love for the night. When I fell in love with the first girl that I dated, it was really intense. After like 2 weeks, I was like, I think we should move in together. I really feel good about this. And my friends were like, don't move in yet. Like, maybe not quite yet. And I was like, I think I should tell her I love her. Like, when should I tell her I love her? And they're all like, just pull it back a little bit. Just like relax. And I was like, okay, I'll try. But like every time I saw her, it was like the world disappeared. And it was just the two of us together. And everything was slow motion and stars. And it was amazing. So I waited, I managed to wait like 2 months before I told her that I loved her, which was a really long time for me because after 2 weeks I was like, I should say it right now. And what happened was that I gave her a poster for her birthday, and I gave her this poster, and she looked at the poster and she was like, oh my God, I love him. And I was like, I love you too. And then we kissed, and it was great, and like later that night, I was talking to my roommate, and I was like, I said I love you, and she was like, oh, did you say it first? And I was like, well, she said I love him. And I don't know if she's talking about me or the poster, but I just went for it, and then like, there was nothing else to be said. And not too long after that, she said, I love you to me unprompted, where there's no poster involved. And so then I felt better about it. But it took us like a year to have a conversation about that first time. And she was like, I definitely said I love it. But then I didn't know what to do after you said I love you. It was really awkward. So there was this other awkward moment from when we first started dating too. And you all should know, I had been working in public health and specifically with HIV positive people for like 5 years at that point. And I was counseling a lot of people too about folks who are negative, folks who are positive, about avoiding STIs and HIV and how to tell someone if you're positive and how to negotiate safer sex if that's what you wanted and all these things. So my like daily life was consumed with talking to people about how to talk to their partners about having sex. So like 2 months into when we were dating, I got a text from her and it said, hey, what's your status? And I froze. I was like, oh my God, I'm the worst public health worker ever. I didn't have a conversation with her about status. We never talked about it. I kind of like blew past it because I was like, well, we're both women. Like, it's not as big of a deal and like whatever. So I like freaked out. I was in my apartment, I was alone, and I'm like staring at my phone. I'm like, I should call, we should have this in-person conversation. Then I was like, no, I should text her back so she gets it like right away in case she's busy. Like, I want to reassure her right now that like, it's okay. So I text her back and I'm like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I didn't talk to you about this before. It's totally my fault. I should have brought it up, but I'm negative. And she was like, And there's like silence. And I'm like staring at my phone. I'm like, I should call. I feel so bad about the situation. I can't believe it's gotten this far out of hand. And she texts back and she's like, I meant, have you left the house yet? And I was like, what? No, I'm still in the house. And she was like, okay, well, you're late. I'll see you soon. Bye. And I was like,
well, that's it for the Jumbo Podcast.
Yay, that was great.
So, Jumbo.
Jumbo Podcast.
Was it Jumbo enough for you?
It was Jumbo enough for me.
It was sufficiently Jumbo for me.
Pretty much.
It was very Jumbo. Anyway, we hope you liked it. And if you did, please rate us on iTunes to help more people find us. If you would like to tell your own story, come to our next show. You can go to our website at spokespeople.org for more information. That's spokespeople.org. You can also like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter.
Podcast audio production by Gene Goldstein Plusser.
What up?
The San Francisco Bureau of the Mangrove Institute for Higher Learning and Audio Technical Production. Podcast coordination by Sarah Bars. The event was hosted by Elizabeth Simone. Event coordination by me, Rebecca Stiebader.
Amazing, amazing.
I know. Thank you. And event photography by Chris Koster. Music for this podcast was by First You Get the Sugar.
Thanks for listening.
Yay. Ooh.